Masechet Baba Metzia, Daf Kaf Chet. We're in the middle of a discussion of whether returning a lost item based on siman, a distinguishing mark that the claimant gives, is that law mideoraita or midirabanan? We were arguing that it is dirabanan, but then we asked, on a deoraita level, you can't give it to this guy. So how can a dirabanan come and overrule that? And we suggested that maybe everyone agrees. If anyone who loses something would prefer that they can claim it based on simanim, because it's hard to have witnesses. And therefore, since everyone agrees, so then that's a good system, because we'll all forego any rights we have to claim it by test, by witnesses. But then we saw that there's an exception to that rule, like a love would not want, if something in a loan document is found, he would not want the malve, the lender, to be able to claim it based on simanim. He said, no, make him prove it with witnesses. And so since he would not want that, so then the whole system will break down, because not everybody will want a claimant to be able to take something back based on simanim. So instead, we go back to saying es deoraita ela amara va simanim deoraita dichtiv hayay mecha derosh achicha oto v'chita le'adatcha she'itenenu kodem she'idreshenu ela dorshehu im ramai hu o eno ramai la besimanim shema'mina. Rava said, claiming something with a siman as actually a deoraita application, as we see from this pasuk, that if you find something, you should keep it with you until your friend who lost it comes and asks for it. Now, what, you're going to give it to him before he comes and seeks it? You don't even know who it is. So rather, what does it mean? Aderosh achicha. It's not that your brother who is doing the seeking, but rather you, the one who finds it, should do the seeking, the investigation, to check if he is a liar or if he's not a liar. Now, how do you check if he just comes and says it's mine? Well, you have to check him. Is it not talking about if he offers simanin? Then that's sufficient. And this is a conclusive proof. Even though before we rejected this proof, because we said maybe this is not by distinguishing marks, maybe it's actually by a witness. But right now, we tried going down that road of that it's witnesses and simanim or derabanan, but we got stuck because we couldn't explain the mechanism. So therefore, we're now accepting this proof that simanim are deoraita. Now Rava adds, Amar Rava, im timsi loma simanim deoraita. Rava says, if you think that simanim are deoraita law, now the Gemara interrupts Rava's statement to say, im timsi lomar hapashit le simanim deoraita. What do you mean, if you say? You just concluded, you argued a whole thing and concluded that it is deoraita. Why are you saying, if you say? Mishum tikal memar kedeshaninan. Because in fact, it's still iffy. We're not still sure, because you could say, as we said before, that when you have to check him to see if he's a liar or not, it's through edim. And maybe there's some other way of explaining how it could be drabanan. So we're not absolutely sure. I mean, even though this was our conclusion, it's not 100%. So anyway, Rabbi is saying, if you accept this conclusion that in fact is doraita, then I have another law to add. Simanim v'simanim yaniach. Let's say two claimants come, and each one, they both offer a siman. What do you do? You're the one that finds it. You have to keep it with you until they bring more proof, until they bring witnesses or something else. Simanim v'adim inaten lebal ha'adim. If you find something, and one claimant has a siman, and one claimant has witnesses, well, witnesses is always better. So you give it to the one who has witnesses. Simanim v'simanim ve'ed echad, ed echad keman delete dame v'yaniach. One claimant has only a siman, and the other claimant has a siman, and also one witness that says this belongs to him. One witness is like nothing. It doesn't count for anything, and therefore you keep it in your possession until more proof will come forth. If one person has witnesses that he wove it, or it was woven for him, and the other person has witnesses that they saw that this guy dropped it. So there's two claimants, right? And one claimant has witnesses that he wove it, and the claimant has witnesses that he dropped it. Give it to the claimant who has witnesses that he dropped it. Because just because the other guy who only has witnesses that he wove it or was woven for him, it doesn't mean that it was still his. Maybe he sold it to someone else. It's true he wove it and it was his. He sold it to someone else, and that someone, that buyer, is the one that lost it. So that's not such good proof. I mean, it's okay. But if you have that as opposed to someone where he has witnesses that saw him drop it, well, then for sure that's the guy who lost the item, and give it to him. Midat orko, midat rochbo, tinaten limidat orko. The midat rochbo, sheore kameshaer la, kad mechase la, mara bekae. Umidat orko, la mishtaer la. If someone lost a garment and you found it, and now you have two claimants, one of them can give you the measure of the length, and the other can give you the measure of the width. So you give it to the one who has a measurement for the length, because the width is easier to guess. The width, let's say, imagine it's a tallit like we wear. So the width would be how far it goes down the back. And so you can measure, estimate a person, he's tall, he's short, how much the width is easier to guess than the length of it, which is more variable. And so therefore the length is harder to guess, and you give it to that person if he gets it right. Midat orko, midat rochbo, midat gamav. Inaten midat orko verochbo. If you find a garment and you have two claimants, one tells you the measure of the length and the measure of the width. He tells you it's 5 by 4. And the other one gives you only a measurement of the gamma. This is interesting. It's based on the Greek letter gamma, which in capital looks like two perpendicular lines. Meaning, he doesn't know the length and the width separately. He just tells you the sum of it. He says that it's 9. He knows the perimeter, but he doesn't know the separate length and width, or he knows the area, but not the separate length and width. So that is less specific, and therefore you give it to the one who has more specific details. Midat orko, midat rochbo, midat mishkelotav, intend midat mishkelotav. If one claimant knows the length and width, and the other one knows its weight, knowing its weight is more specific, harder to guess, and therefore you give it to the one who knows its weight. Hu omer simane haget, vihi omeret simane haget inaten la. Now if the item that was lost is a get, and both the husband and the wife give simanim, well, you give then you give it to her. We ask, bemai, ilem bemidat orko v'rochbo, what kind of simanim does she give? Is it the length and width of the get document? Dilma behade denakit le chazite. Well, that doesn't mean that she had it. She might have just seen it. She might have seen it in the husband's hands as he was preparing it or carrying it around. And so she can estimate, it's 8 by 11, but doesn't mean that she had it. So that's not specific enough. Ela nekev yesh bo besad ot peloni. Rather, she has something specific that she sees a hole next to this particular letter. Well, that is not something she would be able to see from far. Only if she had it close by and it was in her hands, then she would be able to identify it. So that's why we give it to her. You see, even though he gives a siman, that doesn't mean anything. Because of course he had it, right? He had it before when he wrote it up, before he gave it to her, right? But the thing is, if she has a siman and a specific one, then that means she then got it later, and that means she is divorced, and so she gets it. Hu omer simane achut, vi omeret simane achut inaten la. If both of them give a siman regarding the string that you tie up the get with, then you give it to her. What kind of siman regarding the string are we talking about? Is it just the color of the string, if it's white or red? Well, that she can see from far while he's holding it. So maybe he just prepared it, but he never actually gave it to her, and she saw that it was white or red. So that's not a proof that he gave it to her. Rather, she knows the length of the string. She would only know the length. The string is wrapped around, so you can't tell what the length is just by looking at it from far. That means she received the get, she opened it up and pulled out the string and saw how long the string was, and therefore she gets it. Hu omer ba chafisa, vhi omer ba chafisa inaten lo. Mai tama medayat adeko madiit le ba chafisa hu demanach le. If they both give a siman regarding the location, that it was in his briefcase, well then you give it to him. Why? Because she knows that her husband keeps all of his important documents in his briefcase. So that's just a guess, or she might have just seen it there. That's not specific enough to prove that she actually received the get. Next Mishnah. Now, if you find something, How long do you have to announce it for? Right? Forever? For 50 years? Ad kedesh she'edu bo shechenav dibnei Rabbi Meir. No. Only until such time as the neighbors know about it. It was likely lost by one of the neighbors. So as long as the neighborhood all knows about your announcement, that's it. That's all you have to do. Rabbi Yehuda omer shalosh regalim. Ve'achad haregel she'acharon shiva yamim kedesh she'elech lebeto shelosha ve'achzor shelosha ve'achriz yom echad. Rabbi Yehuda says, you have to keep announcing it for three holidays, three of the major holidays, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, that assuming that you're going to Yerushalayim. And so everybody's going to Yerushalayim, and anyone who lost something will announce it there. There was a special place in Yerushalayim where everybody would come to. That was the national lost and found. And so you have to do it three times because people are coming from different places. They'll hear an announcement. Hey, did anybody lose? All right, such and such an item. And now a person, maybe I lost it, I'm not sure. He wants to go back to his house and check. And then he'll come back and claim it. So you have three chances to do that. And even on the last of the holidays, you add an extra 7 days to it so that a person who hears it, maybe he didn't hear it the first two times. Not everybody necessarily comes for every holiday, or maybe he missed the announcement the first two holidays. So let's say he heard it the third holiday on, let's say it was Shavuot is the third holiday that he got there. The third holiday since it was started to be proclaimed, and he hears, right, did anybody lose this item? He says, oh, maybe I lost that. I want to go home and check. So you give him 3 days to go home. That's average, how long it takes to go home, and then he'll check, and 3 days to come back to Jerusalem, and 1 day to proclaim, yeah, I lost it, and he can then claim it. All right, so that's two very different opinions. The Biuda seems that would be much longer to have to wait, basically 6 months, about. And Rabbi Meir, a shorter time just to tell the neighbors. Tana, Shechene Abeda, my Shechene Abeda, Ilam Shechenim Dabal Abeda, Iyada Le, Lezul, Hadere Nihale. It says, enough time to tell the neighbors. Whose neighbors? Is it the neighbors of the person who lost the item? Well, if you know who lost the item, then just return it to him. So what does that mean? The neighbors of whom? Ela shechene makom shim said bo aveda. Rather, the neighbors of the spot where it was found. It's most likely that it was lost by someone who lives nearby in that neighborhood. And so you don't know. I mean, the person could live very far away and they happen to be passing through, but you can't announce everywhere. And so you announce in the neighborhood that it was lost. That's the first opinion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says you wait 3 holidays and then 7 days more. Mishnah Masechet Tanit says that we start praying for rain, meaning saying Barech Aleinu Tental Matar Libracha on the 3rd of Cheshvan is the first opinion. And Rabban Gamliel says, no, on the 7th of Cheshvan. The 7th of Cheshvan is 15 days after the last day of Sukkot and Shemini Aseret. Why do you wait that long? So that the last traveler, pilgrim, can get back home, because we don't want it to rain on him while he's traveling back from Jerusalem until where he lives. So what's the farthest distance? Well, that'll be a 15-day journey to go to the last point in those who are in Eretz Yisrael to reach their homes in on Nehar Perat. Here, if you're in Yerushalayim, there's various ways to go to the Euphrates River, various routes, depending on where they are. That would be a 15-day journey. So this is a problem, because according to this Mishnah Masechet Tanit, it takes 15 days for people to get home, but we just said that you give 7 days, only 3 days to get home to check to see if something's lost, and then 3 days to get back and one to claim it. So what is it, 3 days or 15 days? Amar Rav Yosef Lakashia Kan B'Mikdash Rishon, Kan B'Mikdash Sheni. Rav Yosef says one of the Mishnayot is talking about the first Bet HaMikdash, and one's talking about the second Bet HaMikdash, and we explain. B'mikdash yishon t'nefishe Yisrael tubah, dichti behu Yehuda v'Yisrael rabim, kechol asher al hayam laro, ba'inan kul dehai. The first Bet HaMikdash the population of the Israelites was many. Yudan Yisrael was as many as the sand and the sea, and so therefore they lived very spread out, and it took 15 days to get to the farthest reaches. Whereas Bimikdashani de la Nefesh Yisrael Tuba Dichtibehu Kol HaKahal Kehad Arba Ribo Alpaim Shelosh Meot V'Shishim La Ba'inan Kulahai. During the second Bet HaMikdash, the population was not very numerous, and Sefer Azaz says it was only 42,360 those who lived in the land of Israel. This doesn't explain, this really would be only people that live in the land of Israel, not those who live in Bavel all the way to the Euphrates. Even though the question was about the Euphrates here, we're really answering about the border just of Israel. But anyway, and the second Bet HaMikdash, because the population of Israel was much less, so presumably they were spread out much less, and it only took 3 days for the person who lived the farthest to get home. Amar le'abaye v'haketi v'yeshua kohanim v'halviyim v'gomerim shorim v'sho'arim v'chol Yisrael be'arehem. Abaye challenges. It says, even though there was only 42,000 people, that Jews, that lived in Israel, but it says that they all lived in their cities, the kohanim, the levim, the singers, the porters. They dwelt in their city, so they were equally spread out. They just that they were the population in each city was less, but they did live even in far off cities that would have taken longer than 3 days to get to. So that answer doesn't fit. Therefore, you know what? Switch it around and make the after Rav Yosef just said one is the first and one the second Bet HaMikdash. So switch them around. Mikdash Rishon de Nefesh Yisrael Tuba Dim Savat Alma Mishtakechi Shayarta Dazli Ben Bimama Ben Belelia La Ba'inan Kulahai. Actually, the one when we say 3 days, that was talking about the first Bet HaMikdash. Because there were so many people and everybody was structured in groups and there were caravans going day and night, regular shuttles going all around the country. They didn't need so much time to travel because you could just get on the next shuttle. They were very organized. A next caravan, and they would get home within 3 days. Pesagi b'tlat hayoma. Bikdash sheni, de'la nefesh Yisrael tuba, v'la misavat alma, v'la mishtakeche sheyata da'azle ben bimama ben bilelia, v'ainen kolehai. Whereas the second Bet HaMikdash, the population of Israel was less, and therefore there weren't as many caravans. They were not so, the transportation was not so organized into groups, and therefore it took them longer. If you missed this caravan, you might have to wait a couple of days till the next one, and then it would take longer to get home. That's where that's the Mishnah that says that it took 15 days for the farthest reaches. Rava Amar Lashana b'Mikdash Rishon v'Lashana b'Mikdash Sheni Lo Yitzlichu Rabbanan b'Avodah Yoter Midai. Rava gives a completely different answer, both in the first and the second Bet HaMikdash. Yeah, right. Maybe sometimes it took longer or shorter, whatever. But that doesn't matter. Even if it took longer, even if it took as much as 15 days, the rabbis did not want to trouble the finder to have to wait there for so long in case a claimant comes back. Right? It's already enough that he picked it up and he announced it for 3 holidays. So he has to stay there another 7 days to see if anybody will go home and check and claim it. We're not going to bother him to wait so long. This answer actually would make sense no matter what, first or second Bet HaMikdash, and it also would include the borders of Israel and even the borders all the way to in Bavel, to the Euphrates, even though, yeah, it takes 15 days to get there and only one way, and then another 15 days to get back, but we can't make everybody who finds something wait that long. Amar Avina, Shema Amina, Ki Machriz Gilima Machriz, Di Salka Datech Abedeta Machriz, Bainan Le Matpe Le Hadayo Mal Yune Bemane, Ela Shema Amina, Gilima Machriz Shema Amina. We're going to see a machloket coming up in a minute about when the finder announces. What does he announce? Does he announce the particular item that I found a cloak? Or does he say in general, I found an item, and the claimant has to know what the item is. The claimant will have to say, oh, I lost a cloak. Is that what it is? So that's a machloket. Ravina says, based on the above, we can learn that when one announces the type of item, and you say it's a cloak, because if you just say anyone lose an item in a general way, then we'd have to add to the amount of time, one day, for the person who might have lost something to go home and check all his items. And if you say anyone lose an item, so the person has to go home, well, maybe I lost an item, he has to go check everything, all the cloaks he has, how many shoes he has, right, how many vessels, forks he has. Check he has a dozen forks, because he doesn't know what was lost. He has to check the inventory of his entire home. That is going to take a whole day. But it doesn't say that we add a whole day for him. So therefore, it must be that the finder announces anyone lose a cloak. And that way, it's easy. When he gets home, it just takes him 1 minute just to make sure that his cloak is in the closet. And it won't take him a whole day, so that's he derives that from there. Rava Amar, afilu tema abed eta machriz, lo tirichu rabbanan babetayu temidai. Rava, however, gives the same response he did before. It could be that you just announce an unspecified lost item, and even though you're right, it will take longer for the guy who lost something to check all his inventory, nevertheless, you can't trouble the finder to wait so long, right? It's enough that he has to wait 7 days. We don't want to add yet another day for him to have to wait. Tenor Rabbanan, regel rishon omer, regel rishon, regel sheni omer, regel sheni, regel shlishi omer, stam. The finder, let's say he found something in the summertime, and so then he comes on Sukkot, and he said, first announcement, right? This is the first holiday I'm announcing. Anyone lose a cloak. And then when he comes back on Pesach, he says, this is the second holiday I am announcing. Anyone lose a cloak. When he comes back on Shavuot, he only says, anyone lose a cloak. And he doesn't say, this is the third time. And then everybody will know, since he didn't say anything, then that is the final chance. Ve'amai lema regel shlishi. We ask why. Why not say, this is the third and last call. Because we don't want the people hearing it to get mixed up, and maybe they mishear shilishi might sound like sheni. And there's a lot of people there, and it's very noisy. And you know, people in the back, they might not catch the last words so clearly, and they might think he said only the second one. And they say, "Oh, I can come back. I can come back on the next holiday on Sukkot." They think they have another chance, but really, he said shilishi, and then they're going to lose out if they know it's the last one, then they'll rush. They have 7 days. They can go and come. And so that's, therefore, don't say anything, and that will be less confusing, because if they hear nothing, then they know this is the last call. Now we ask, Sheni Nameh Atya L'Achlufei B'Rishon. Well, even the second, you shouldn't announce anything, because he'll get mixed up between the second and the first. I mean, even though they don't sound the same, but still, he just might not hear the end. But he knows that he said something, and he might think he said the first, even though he said the second. But that is not such a concern. Because no matter what, there still will be another chance. So even if the announcer said, this is the second holiday, and the person who lost something heard the first, but anyway, he's going to come back the next holiday, and so there'll still be a chance to claim it. So the consequences are not so great. Whereas if it's the third and he heard the second, then he thinks he can come back, but really it's the last call and he's not going to come back and he has to hurry, so therefore that one is more consequential. Tenor banan barishona kol mi shemasa vedah yamachriz aleha shelosha regalim v'acha regel acharon shivat yamim kedei she'elech shelosha v'yachzor shelosha v'yachriz yom echad. That's what we taught in the Mishnah. That's what they did at first. That was the first practice, that anyone who found something would announce it for 3 holidays, and the last one they would stick around for 7 days to give a chance for the people who might have lost it to go home for three-day journey, check, come back 3-day journey, and then have 1 day to claim it. However, mishechere bet hamikdash shibane b'mehra b'yamenu hitkinu shehem machrizim b'bet hakenesiyot v'bet hamidrashot. However, that only worked when the bet hamikdash was up and everybody was coming to Yerushalayim for the holiday. But once the bet hamikdash was destroyed and people are not coming anymore, so then the rabbis made an ordinance that people should announce lost items in the synagogues and in the bet midrash. That's where the public is, and then people in the neighborhood will hear it and be able to claim it. However, when the oppressors came, this was a law in Persia, the Persian government said, anyone who loses an item, if you find a lost item, it goes to the government, right? It's not finders keepers, it's government keepers. So at that point, the Jewish community said, I want the government to just confiscate someone lost a cloak book or lost a wallet or whatever. And so they could not announce it in a public place like a synagogue, because then the government would come and confiscate it. So instead, they made a new ordinance and says, listen, just tell your neighbors and your friends, and that's sufficient. That's all you could do. That's the most you can publicize it without the government hearing it. And hopefully from the locals, they'll tell each other and we'll find the person who lost it. What does that mean, the oppressors, when they increased? Because they say that anything that's lost goes to the government. Rabbi Ame, Ashkach ad Udya de Dinare. Chaziahu Roma'a de Ka Mirtat. A story of Rabbi Ame. He found a vessel full of coins and he was going to pick it up to return it to its owner. But he saw a Roman and he hesitated because maybe a Roman soldier. And he says, oh, maybe I can't take it because the Roman government's going to confiscate it. But the Roman said, go and take it and find the rightful owner. We're not Persians who say that a lost item goes to the king. So this is a rare instance of a positive statement about Romans. What do you got? What do you know? Right? This was only a Persian law that everything goes to the king, but the Romans did not have that. The Romans said, oh, someone lost an item. Okay, pick it up and go find the rightful owner. And this is the Biameh. This is a story in Eretz Yisrael, which was under Roman rule. Tenu Rabbanan, even To'an. Hayta Yerushalayim, kol mi she'abda lo abeda, nifneh lesham. V'chol mi she'mose abeda, nifneh lesham. Baraita says that there was a stone, a claimant stone in Yerushalayim. Archaeologists have found it. This is what they claim. This is the claimant stone. It was a few stairs, and you go to the top, and there'll be a platform, so it'll be high up. And that way, if you find something, you'd go up there and announce, and anyone who lost something would also go there. And they would know that to find it there. So this was the national lost and found. One person would stand up and announce, right? Anybody lose an item, and the other one, and whoever lost it would come and give a distinguishing mark and be able to claim it. And this is what we refer to in the story about Choni HaMe'agel, when he prayed for rain, and they said, and it kept raining and raining. So they said, go and check the claimant stone. It was on it was very high up. It was the highest point in Yerushalayim. So I said, listen, if the rain went all the way up to that point, then that's very high, then that's enough rain. And so, right, we see Evan Atan makes sense. It would be a high area so that everybody could go there and be able to see what was in the lost and found. Interestingly, we were able to find the lost and found that had been lost for a couple of thousand years. Mishnah, Amar et aveda velo amar simaneha lo yiten lo. If a claimant comes and identifies what was lost, he says it was a cloak, but he doesn't give any signs, distinguishing marks to identify the more particularly what the cloak is like, then we do not give it to him. V'haramai, avo pishe amar simaneha lo yiten lo shnemar adrosh achicha oto ad shetidrosh et achicha im ramai hu im eno ramai. If the claimant is a trickster, meaning he's not a trustworthy person, even if he gives a siman, we do not give it to him. As the pasuk says, until your brother investigates, and we already interpreted that, that means you investigate your brother. The claimant who comes, check, is he an honest person or not? So if he's not, then we don't give it to him no matter what. Itmar, Rav Yudah Amar, Avedta Machriz, Rav Nachman Amar Gilima Machriz. Here's the machloket we mentioned before. According to Rav Yudah, the finder announces, I found a lost item. Just he doesn't specify what type of item it is. The claimant has to say what it is. Rav Nachman, however, says that's too general. All right, how are you going to know what category the item is in? Rather, you say the announcer says a cloak was lost, and then the finder, the guy who lost it, has to identify it more particularly by giving a siman. Rav Yehuda amar aved eta machriz di amat gelima machriz cheshinan d'ramai. Now, Rav Yehuda says you should keep it general and just say there was an unspecified lost item, because if you say it was a cloak, then that will invite swindlers that will say, oh yeah, a cloak, yeah, that's my cloak, and he'll guess a color or something, and he'll try to get it. So therefore, keep it as general as possible, not to give any hints. to a trickster. Rav Nachman amar gilima machriz l'ramai l'chashin nandim ken en l'davar sof. Rav Nachman says, no, announce what it is. Say it's a cloak, because if you're going to worry about tricksters, then there's no end to the matter, right? And don't announce anything, so that way no one can trick it. Yeah, but then no, the rightful owner won't be able to find it. Rav Nachman says, be practical. It's just say, anyone lose an item, right? You have no idea what it is. But if you say, a cloak, a fork, a bowl, then people know, oh yeah, I had a fork. Oh, well, let me check mine. Oh yeah. So it makes it easier to connect finders with losers if you say what the item is. Tenan, amaret haveda velo amaret simaneha, hare ze lo yiten lo. I amaret bishlam habedet hamachriz ha kamashmalan, afagav damar gelima ki lo amar siman lo mehadrinan le. So we're going to try to bring a proof from the Mishnah that we just cited about this machloket. The Mishnah said, if the finder announces the claimant and now says what the item is, but he didn't give any simanim, we don't give it to him. He has to give specific simanim. Now, if you say that the finder announces there was a lost item, then that makes sense, that this teaches us that even though the claimant identified the unidentified item correctly, right? The guy who found it just said, anybody lose a thing? And the claimant comes and says, it was a cloak. I lost a cloak. Still, the chidush of the Mishnah is we don't give it to him because he has to say what type of cloak. He has to give more specific details. Otherwise, we don't give it to him. So this Mishnah makes sense according to Rav Yehuda, who says that we do not announce what type of item it was. But according to Rav Nachman, where the announcer says, did anybody lose a cloak? A cloak was found. So then the Mishnah would be saying that the claimant comes and says, yeah, I lost a cloak. And the Mishnah says, oh, you don't give it to him. Obviously, you don't give it to him. He's just repeating back, right? Someone said, I found a cloak. Someone says, I lost a cloak. Well, there's no proof there at all. So obviously, if he doesn't give distinguishing marks, then you would not return it to him. So the Mishnah doesn't make sense according to Rav Nachman. Rav Safra says, I can explain the Mishnah. According to Rav Nachman also, that in fact, the person who finds it announces, I found a cloak. Anyone lose a cloak? And he comes and says, yes, I lost a cloak. And he also adds some distinguishing marks. He said it was blue. So what does it mean that he didn't give any siman? He didn't give a clear-cut siman. It was just a general siman. That's the chidush of the Mishnah, that's not good enough. He has to say more specifically, right, it's this size, it has this thing in the pocket, something that would be clearly distinguishing that he wouldn't be able to guess. If someone is a trickster, we don't give it to him, even if he gives a siman. So the Braita gives a progression. In the beginning, if anyone lost an item and he gave a siman, then he could take it. But then there were many swindlers around and they would just, you know, guess things and they were taking things that were successfully, claiming things that weren't really theirs. So they made a new takana and they said, listen, before you come and claim something, go and bring a character witnesses that come and testify that you're an honest person, and only then will you come and claim it. Character witnesses are actually a very common thing in Roman courts. You'd bring witnesses. Witnesses weren't only to say, you know, he had an alibi, he wasn't there at the time, or we saw him, but a person who had a lot of friends, especially if he was wealthy or aristocrat, he would bring other important people to testify, oh, this is an honest, trustworthy person, right? A person like this, he wouldn't do such a thing. Okay, so that's the kind of thing we bring a character witness before he can take it. And we have a funny story about the father of Rapapa lost a donkey. And someone found it, and he wanted to claim it. So So the father of the papa, who we presume must have been a righteous person, if his son was a great enough papa, and so he came to Rabba, now who's acting as judge there, and says, listen, it's mine, right? I want to claim it. He has to have a siman. And Rabba said, first bring witnesses that you're not a swindler. Okay, so that's the rule we just said. Azal etisa hade amalehu yadritun bed ramayhum. So he did. He brought the father brought witnesses, and Rabab Harabuna as judge asked the witnesses, "Do you know if this man is a swindler?" Amru le'in. They said yes, and he thought they misunderstood. Amalehu ana ramaat. So the father of Rab Papa says, "Why, did you just say that I am a swindler?" And they said, "No, Amru le anan lav ramayat kamrina." No, that we meant to say is you are not a swindler, right? How do you answer a question like that, right? Do you know if he is a swindler? And they answered yes, and it sounded like they were saying yes, we know he is a swindler, but really what they meant to say is yes, we know that he's not a swindler. But that it got lost in translation there. Amar Rabba bar Rav Huna mistabera la maiti inish chobata lenafshehem. So Rabba bar Rav Huna, the judge, said, you know what, we're going to believe the witnesses when they said that what they meant is he's not a swindler, because the father of Papa is the one that brought the witnesses, and no one would bring witnesses that bring condemnation. He obviously knows the people that he brought. And the fact that he can bring witnesses and they came means that they must have really meant that the father of Papa is a trustworthy person, and so he let him have his donkeys back. Mishnah. Kol davar she'oseh ve'ochel ya'aseh ve'yochal. Ve'davar she'en oseh ve'ochel yimacher. She'ne'mar v'hashe'boto lo. Re'he'ach t'shibenu lo. If someone finds an item, something that works and eats, meaning an animal that can go do farm work and can do more work than it consumes, so it's a net gain, then the finder should let it work and let it, whatever it produces, from what it produces, feed it. And that way the farmer can take care of the animal and not have a loss. So that's what he should continue to do. However, if it's an item that does not work for what it eats, meaning it puts in less work than it eats, consumes more, it's a net loss altogether, then the person who finds it should sell it. How do you know? Because the pasuk says, return the item to the person who lost it. So make sure to look out how to return it to him. If it's a net loss and the finder keeps it for a while, then every day that goes by, let's say it was an animal that was worth $1,000 when he found it. But now, as it eats, you see, anything that it eats, the finder has to provide that. But eventually, when you find the person who lost it, the person who lost it has to pay for the expenses of all that time. So if it costs now $10 every day to feed the animal, and it's not making much, it's a weak animal, so now every day that goes by, it's worth less and less. And if you wait enough time, then the animal is going to be worth much less. Maybe it'll go down to zero. And then the guy comes and says, "Oh, you found my animal, great." But the guy says, "Yeah, but you owe me $1,000 for all the food that I had to have to give to it, all the expenses. So now you didn't return to him anything." Pasuk says, "Return it to him." And therefore, if it's a net loss, then he should simply sell it. The finder should sell it at the current value and put the money aside. So mayeheh bedamim. Now that money, let's say he sells it now for $1,000, and he's holding on to that money until he can find the rightful owner of the animal, and he'll give them the payment. Now, what do you do with the money in the meantime? Rabbi Tarfon says the person who found the animal and now sold it and has $1,000 can use that money. If he wants, he can go invest it, he can buy some merchandise, sell it, and he can use it for himself, and then when the guy comes back, then he'll get the money together. And therefore, since the finder can use it, the finder is responsible for it. If it gets lost or stolen, the finder has to make up the difference. The benefit is he can use it. Rabbi Akiva omer lo yishtamesh behen lefichach im avdu en haya b'achadutan. Rabbi Akiva, however, says that the finder cannot use that money. He has to put it away. Put it in a drawer somewhere. This is someone else's money. He doesn't have permission to use it. But that also comes with the consequence that if it gets lost or stolen, so he doesn't have to make up the difference. He's not responsible for it. He's kind of like a shomer chinam, right? He's doing a favor. Here, I found your animal. I saved it. I sold it so that you wouldn't lose money, and now I'm holding the money for you, but I don't get any benefit out of it, and therefore, if it gets lost, he doesn't have to make it up. Now we ask, ul olam. Now, when you say you have to keep the animal and use it and feed it, how long do you have to do that? Even if it's a, if it's making up its own expenses, right? Forever? No, not forever. 12 months. You keep it there. You keep the animal. You keep feeding it. Let it keep working for 12 months. And after that, you don't have to do this job forever. You can sell it. If you find something that produces more than it eats, like a cow or a donkey, so then you have to take care of it for 12 months, and after that, assess its value, and you can sell it and put the money on the side for the owner. Agalim usyachim, the Braita continues and says, if it's calves and foals, meaning young animals that don't work a lot, you don't have to now take care of them for 12 months, too long. Rather, only 3 months. If the owner doesn't come for 3 months, then, you know what, evaluate it, sell it, and leave the money on the side. Avazin v'tarnegolin mitapel ben shiloshim yom mikan ve'elach sham demehen umanichan. Third category of items in this beraita is geese and roosters. So those tend to them for 30 days, and if the claimant doesn't come, then assess their value, sell them, and put the money on the side. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, tarnegolet ki behema gasa. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak says a chicken is like a domesticated animal because a chicken produces eggs a lot. I think it produces an egg every day, and so that covers the cost of his food, and therefore you should keep it for 12 months. That's unlike geese and roosters that don't produce much. Since they don't produce much, they only have to keep them for 30 days because it's a net loss, and you want to give the owner back the value of what he lost. Good. Tanya na mehachi, we have a braita that backs up what Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak said about chickens. Tanegolet behema gasa mitapel behen shenem asar chodesh mikan va'elach sham demehen umanichan. Right, it says that chickens and large animals that both work and produce a lot, the finder has to take care of them for 12 months. And after that, he can sell it. Agalim usyachim mitapel behen sheloshim yom mikan ve'elach sham demehen umanichan. This now is a second braita that also goes on and talks about calves and foals, and you have to tend to them for 30 days. Now, this is in contradiction to the first braita that said 3 months for calves, and this says only 30 days for calves. We're going to ask about this contradiction in just a minute. Avazin v'tarnegolin v'chol davar shetipolo merube misecharo mitapel ben shelosha yamim mikan ve'elach sham demehen u'manichan. Geese and roosters, where what you have to put into them is more than what they make. It's a net loss. Therefore, you only have to take care of them for 3 days and then you sell them. This is also a contradiction because over here it said in the third category is 30 days and here it says only 3 days. So what are we going to do with these contradictions? Kasha agalim usachim agalim usachim avazin v'tanegolin avazin v'tanegolin. We have two questions. One about calves and foals. Is it 3 months? Or what we find in the second braita, that it's only 30 days. And we have another contradiction regarding geese and roosters. Is it 30 days, as it says in the first, or only 3 days, as it says in the second braita? And the answer is, agalim usachim agalim usachim lakashya ha de ra'aya veha de pituma. Regarding calves and foals, there's no problem. The first ruling of the braita, that you keep it for 3 months, that's talking about calves that need to graze. And there's plenty of grazing pasture land, so they're easy to take care of. Whereas the second braita are talking about a time of their lives or time of the year when these calves have to be fattened up. And so that requires a lot of work, a lot of food, and the finder doesn't have to pay all that expense. And it's not good to pay that expense because then whoever lost it is going to have to end up paying and will lose out on the value of what he lost in the first place. And therefore, if it's a case that would have to be fattened up, then it's only for 30 30 days. And there's also no problem regarding the geese and roosters. The first braita that says keep them for 30 days, that's talking about large ones that you don't have to work too much to take care of them, whereas the small ones require a lot of work, and therefore you only have to keep them for 3 days. If there's a net loss in between what it's going to eat and what it's going to work and produce, then you sell it. And we learn in a braita, when you find an animal of your friend, you have to return it, meaning return its value. So you have to go and calculate how you're going to do that, and do not feed a calf to calves, meaning don't lose out on the value of the calf by keeping it and feeding it more than it works. Or same thing, don't lose the value of a foal to foals, or goose to geese, or rooster to roosters. Therefore, if it's a losing proposition, then sell it and keep the money. And then if and when the original owner comes around, you can pay him, and he'll be so thankful that now he has the value of what he lost and will not have to pay for all the expenses in the meantime. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.